So we're going to go ahead and get started. I think we're actually on time, which is amazing. So my name is Angela Dugan. I'm part of the evangelism group. I work with Clark and some of the other folks that are here today presenting. So what I'm going to be talking about with Clark for the next hour is all of the application lifecycle management features that are included in Visual Studio 2010. So we're going to be able to talk through a lot of features. We're going to demo some cool stuff. And if afterwards you want to see some more, we've got some great demos going on apparently downstairs. We've got some partners down there doing some live demos of tools as well. So just so you don't think this is all you get. So one of the things we always kind of start talking about when we talk about ALM is, you know, what makes you unhappy? Because these are the things that actually helped us determine what gets into the product. So some of these things have already been touched on throughout the keynote by Jay. So for instance, you know, development practices. I was a consultant before I came to Microsoft. Every place I worked, it was a little bit different, right? Some places they had some really well-documented practices, but not necessarily enforced. Some places they really didn't have much. It was kind of, you know, everyone's a cowboy. So being able to set those up, enforce them, great thing to be able to do automatically, right? Because no one wants to be that guy walking around with a binder and a yardstick making sure people are doing what they need to do. Underestimated development tasks. Yeah, who hasn't been there, right? Yeah, it'll take 2 hours. It's easy. Yeah, you know, making sure that you have a good way to communicate how long things are going to take, what are the dependencies, some great stuff that we're going to show today. No repro bugs, so we touched on that just a little bit in the keynote, so Clark is definitely going to be showing off some cool stuff there. The whole works on my machine thing, where we're adding a lot of tools to help kind of mitigate that, because it's real, right? I mean, it happens. So let's do everything we can to make that go away. Implementation doesn't match the design. We set up some great implementation details, but you know they don't match the design anymore. The documentation's out of date. So we're going to show you some new stuff with the architecture tools that helps get rid of that problem as well. Maintaining legacy code, no offense, Jay, but there's a lot of legacy stuff out there, VB6 and otherwise, right? And sometimes old stuff gets dropped in your lap, and now it's your job to update it, maintain it, but it's hard to get your arms around it, right? There's hundreds of thousands of code, but you don't know what are the dependencies, how do the namespaces talk to each other, so being able to show off some of the new features that help with that as well. And constantly working with busted source code, right? We already talked a little bit this morning about the automated build features, data check-in, to help prevent that kind of stuff from happening, right? We're not even going to let busted code make it in so that other people get stuck with it. And of course, there's a whole lot more. So the main three things that we're going to be talking about are understanding existing systems. So this is mostly around our architect tools. All the tools to help with eliminating bugs. So this is going to include some tools in Visual Studio as well as things in our new test manager tool. And streamlining your process. So we talked about, you know, all the people sitting around snoring because they don't want to sit in status meetings. So there's a lot of ways to automate that kind of information as well. So how we can streamline your process using SharePoint, Work Item Tracking, Team Foundation Server. And most of this stuff is stuff you're already doing today. So we can run some pretty cool kind of under the cover, behind the scenes tools that will help make your life a whole lot easier there too. So just to go a little bit more into detail on what's in the tools, I'm going to start by talking about Team Foundation Server. Now, I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this, so if afterwards you have a lot of questions, again, I'm right outside. So there's kind of two main pieces that we're talking about today. There's a client piece and a server piece. So the server piece, of course, is Team Foundation Server. So this is based on SQL Server technology. It's your collaboration hub for everyone on the team, right? So not just developers anymore. We're reaching out to everybody. So now your BAs, your project managers, your testers, your architects, everybody is involved. Everybody's got stake in the project, so why not give them all tools to help them be part of the project? So Team Foundation Server is your underlying collaboration hub for managing requirements and source code and builds and test cases. We're going to show a lot of this off during the demos. There's also a new piece on the bottom, which we're not really going to get into much today. Again, it's certainly something I can talk at great lengths about later, but there's also the new lab management piece, which ties in really nicely with the new testing functionality to let you virtualize your test lab. So it's using Hyper-V technology to allow you to easily stand up, tear down, virtualize different test environments to be able to automatically build and deploy to them. Some really, really cool new technology there. On the client side, a lot of clients that can talk to Team Foundation Server. Because again, this is all about getting everybody on the team involved, right? So not everyone uses Visual Studio, but a lot of the folks in this room probably do. So of course, that's going to be the focus of today. But there are a lot of other tools out there. So for instance, the Team Explorer, which you saw a little bit of today with Clark's demo, is just a tool that plugs into a lot of other tools so that people can access TFS pretty much regardless of what tools they're comfortable with. So Visual Studio is certainly a way to get at it. You can use the Team Explorer on your desktop. There's a web-enabled version of it, so you can just pop open a browser and hit TFS. There's also integration into the Office suite, so Excel and Project can also touch Team Foundation Server. Very easy to do. And then, you know, lastly, a SharePoint. We're going to demo that as well. So the first thing that we're going to dive into, the first thing we're going to start demoing is understanding existing systems, right? Because let's be real, we really don't get to create new stuff as often as we like. Usually it's maintenance on stuff that's been around. Whether you wrote it or somebody that was there 20 years ago wrote it, you're probably out there maintaining code. So again, one of the things that is really hard to understand sometimes is what is that effect? I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've gone in and made one little change to a class file, right? Check that in, before you know it, there's people in other areas of the office coming and yelling at you because you just broke their stuff, right? So it's kind of, we call it the butterfly effect. One little change over here can propagate throughout the system and you're bringing down pieces you weren't even aware of, right? And a lot of times it's because you don't have visibility into kind of that high level architecture of what's going on. And again, if you're getting a system kind of put in your lap and you're trying to understand it, how fast can you really understand it by stepping through that code, right? That's not really a good way to understand it. And, you know, if you can find really great documentation on that system to walk you through what it does, more power to you. But most of the time, you're not going to find that. So being able to just visualize that, so literally pulling up a diagram that can help you visualize existing code will get you there so much faster. So some of the things we're going to talk about today, the Architecture Explorer. So the Architecture Explorer is a tool that allows you to reverse engineer a diagram from existing code. So this is going to allow you to look at things like what are the different namespaces, assemblies, and classes that exist within the scope of what I'm looking at here. How do they interact with each other? How heavy are the dependencies between them? And the great thing about these is these diagrams are live. So I can actually drill down and say, okay, let's start at the assembly level, but then let's bump down to the namespace. Let's bump down to the class and see how they interact with each other. And then that actually links to actual code. So you can literally click into the code once you've found what it is that you're looking for. So that's a pretty cool feature. You can also do things like generate UML diagrams. So for instance, the sequence diagram, this was probably one of the things that got me the most excited, was being able to reverse engineer sequence diagrams from existing code. Talk about really being able to understand what's going on. You can do this in just a few seconds, right? So if that documentation doesn't already exist, create it on the fly. Why not? So controlling complexity, right? Code has a tendency to go bad as time passes, right? You know, best practices change, you move on to new frameworks, code gets stale and old, right? How can you start ensuring integrity of your code? One of the biggest issues I had when I was an architect was, you know, I'd spend all this time creating these great architectural diagrams and, oh, this is how we're going to do all the code. But then 6 months later, people have kind of gone off the beaten path and no one's really following the paradigm anymore. And those diagrams are pretty much useless. And there's not a good way to validate them short of, you know, pulling out the red pen and printing out some code and kind of seeing how things work. So having the ability to actually set up a diagram ahead of time that says, you know, yes, this is how you should be writing your code, and let's validate that against how people have actually written their code. So this is real-time validation of code against your intended architecture. You can have this be something that you link in real-time as you're running your code. You can make it a build policy. So you can actually fail a build if somebody tries to check in code that's not following the rules. So the first demo we're going to do, Clark, is going to be covering some of these tools that I just talked about. So we're actually going to do a few demos today, but first one, Clark's going to walk through some of the architecture tools.
I'm back. How many people have a whiteboard? Show of hands. Oh, come on. There's got to be more. Be proud of the whiteboard. How many people have actually used the whiteboard to draw those architectural diagrams? I call them the big bubbles, right? Somebody comes in, you talk about you draw this bubble, and you draw this bubble, and this bubble talks to that bubble, and that bubble talks to that bubble, and we know that that bubble can't talk to that bubble, right? But it's just a whiteboard, and it doesn't run. I hear Jay's working on a compiler for that, but It would be really nice if we could have live documentation that did asserting around what our intentions were. So let's make some bubbles. Typical multi-tiered site. We have a web tier, an app tier, we've got some architecture, we've got some fancy lines that kind of go back and forth across, right? Looks pretty nice, pink, yellow, blue. We've all drawn this in kind of some kind of shape, size. But it's just a picture, not here. I can actually right-click and say validate architecture. And it's going to inspect all the code and the projects and the solution to whatever level that I want and make sure that my assumptions carry through. So let's prove that. So here, validation succeeded. I'm going to kind of break the norm right now. I'm going to come up and I've got a reference from, I believe, my blueyonder.core back to my app.core. So there's a line there that should happen. But wait a minute, Clark. You just compiled and that succeeded. How could that be if you have a reference? Well, the compiler is smart enough since version 2 to actually rip out that reference because you didn't use it. Thank you, Jay, for that. Now I'm going to use it. I come back over here, validate my architecture again. And boom. Broken. Very nice. But how many times do we actually go into the diagram, right-click, and say, validate my architecture? I want that thing to run every time my light runs. Or better yet, even before. So let's come over here to the models. We're going to do a little checkbox programming there. We're going to flip that bit to true. And now when I hit Control-Shift-B and I build my app, it fails. Better yet, if I turn around and check this in, source control, check in my pending change, architecture is cool, you will see the light go off. That's good stuff, right? Nobody wants that? Come on. We all end up getting references put into something that we didn't expect to be there. It's not that the things don't change and it's not valid, but it's about causing that conversation. Hey, I would like that class library moved down somewhere else so that it can be used by both pieces. Because I don't want to ship my client library to the customer that has that. I, the architect, I, the dev lead, I, somebody who designed that, know that that should be the case. But that's just kind of architecture stuff. A little bit. Oh, I never checked in my class file. Nobody caught me on that. Come on, the light is cool. It's COM5. But I got handed this kind of bag of stuff. This app. I got to fix this bug. It's not my stuff. I've been working on 15 other things. Now it actually worked. So in the process of me getting handed this thing, I need to do some interrogation. I want to know, what does this thing look like? What's the call stack? How do things work? How many people use Reflector in here? How many people have used the add-in that generates that great bubble diagram that says where all the references are, and you go, oh my God, there's a lot of references, right? What if we could just architecture, oops, a little too fast, generate that thing on the fly for me? How many managers do we have in here? Okay, close your ears. This takes like 20 hours, okay? It takes a long time to generate such pretty documents. And I can expand this and drive into it any way I feel. Pretty cool? I lost your place, Angela. Here you go.
Sorry, I was tweeting pictures of you. All right, so the next thing that we want to talk about is eliminating bugs, right? This is probably the biggest bane of every developer's existence, right? And you know, I've been doing a lot of roadshow tours lately with the testing group, and I'm upfront about it, right? I've always been a developer. I've always been the person saying, it works on my machine. I don't know what you're talking about. This ain't broken, right? So that's probably the biggest issue that we've been trying to really nail down. And we got you a little bit of the way there with the last tools, but we've added a lot in this 2010 feature to almost completely eliminate any possibility of that happening, right? If you're running these tools, if you're using the things we're talking about, there shouldn't be any reason that you can't reproduce pretty much any bug that a tester throws at you. So the kind of process that we go through constantly, right, is we get this huge queue of bugs, right? They're lining up. Developers got this big list of things they got to start working on, right? So you're going through, you're setting up your machine, you're doing your fixes, running your tests, making sure everything seems to run on your machine. You toss it over to testing, then you wait, things get good. You move it into production. So there's kind of this constant cycle of going back and forth. But usually once you get to kind of that, you know, move things into QA, it starts bouncing back and forth, right? That's where we do like we always use like kind of the ping pong analogy. You're slamming it back at the other person, hoping that they don't lob it back at you before you can start working on something else. So we're certainly adding a lot of new things that should help with that. So one of the biggest new things, so this is completely new. This isn't even like, hey, we've added a new feature to Visual Studio. This is a brand new tool that's actually running outside of Visual Studio. The idea being is, you know, it's targeting everybody. So not only can your developers use this tool, but your testers can use this tool. And they don't have to be technical testers either, right? Because it's not baked into Visual Studio. It doesn't require them to have to run any actual code, right? They can do the things that they're good at, right? They can run their manual tests. If you toss some automation at them, they can run that too. They can do bug tracking. They can pull up reports. They can do all of that kind of stuff without having to use Visual Studio, which was kind of a requirement in the past. All of our testing tools were kind of embedded into the Visual Studio environment. So this is giving you a whole new tool to be able to do kind of some of those more non-technical testing things. So things like doing your test planning, creating your iterations, assigning tests to people, setting up machine configurations to test against. So all the things that today you may be doing manually, maybe through spreadsheets or through some other tooling, now you can do it through the test manager. And of course, the test manager sits on top of Team Foundation Server. So everything you're doing in test manager is filtering down to TFS, which means other people have access to it as well. You can also file bugs and track results in there. You're going to get all the same rich stuff that you saw this morning. So there's going to be a new concept of something we call data collectors that allow you to automatically, so somebody can be running a manual test, they don't have to know anything about the fact that there's video being collected and the stack trace is being collected. We're going off to the event log and recording everything that's happening, right? That can happen automatically as they run their test. And then if they find a problem, all that data gets sucked into the bug automatically. They don't have to know how to do anything special for that, right? They create a bug, it adds all that great information, and then you can ship that off to the developer. So the bugs now become much more actionable than they were in the past. So instead of, you know, hey, this screen is busted, and maybe a screenshot, right? Usually that's kind of all you have. Now you can have action logs, you can have video, so things you can actually take action on, right? You can really do something with the data that you're given. It's not just kind of stabbing in the dark hoping that you can reproduce it. And again, we're going to show off some of these great things. So things like system information, steps to reproduce, what are the exact things I need to do to make this happen? IntelliTrace, screenshots and video capture. And the one thing that's not mentioned on here that I forgot to put on here is if you're using the lab management piece, you can even attach kind of a bookmark into that virtualized lab environment so that I, as a developer, if the tester was using that virtualization platform, I can actually jump into that image at the point in time that they found the bug and look at it for myself. So that's a really, really powerful tool. So IntelliTrace, we showed this off this morning. So again, IntelliTrace, that's one of those data collectors that can run in the background as a test is being run. So it essentially kind of does TiVo on the stack trace. So what are the lines of code that we're executing? What are the values of the variables that were being passed around? What exceptions were being bubbled up? So these things are actually being recorded and packaged in such a way that you can hand it to a developer, they can open it in Visual Studio and just walk through it like it was natively already on their desktop. So really easy to use and extremely powerful. So I'm going to drag Clark back up here. Didn't get much of a break to show off some of the new rich bug functionality.
So let's dive into bugs a little bit more. We actually have a new product that hasn't quite shipped yet, but will, but it's the IDE for the tester. So at first I just kind of want to show you, expand upon what we talked about in the keynote and start to show a little bit more about the test and what the test looks like. So here I'm in the testing tool. You know, we're not going to dive into this a whole bunch, but here's a failed test. What does that look like? Well, for the tester, it looks like this. This is the test. But this is actually, or this is the test result. All of this data is saved inside the Team Foundation server. If I close this, here's the test case. I have all the definitions about the steps. What can I do? I have a summary. Everything that you would expect, right? I can come over to Visual Studio. Pin that up. And I can see the same types of test cases. Breaking down those walls between the developer, the tester, the business analyst, putting that information kind of out there. So let's look at one. Let's take that one that we were looking at earlier. Some of that down here. And I actually have the option to run and play through this. We call this fast forward, manual fast forward.
Manual testing.
Where I can play one at a time, and it's J, or I can play them all and kind of fast forward all the way up to a certain point in time. Come on, play. J alluded to this a little bit earlier in the keynote. This is, you know, capturing your event clicks throughout. Did that one. Let's just be daring and go with it all. And granted, this is a simple test case. Whoa. Everybody see the bird over there? All right, this is going horribly south. It hasn't released yet. But let's look at a bug. So I have a lot of stuff that gets captured with a bug. Again, it's what they choose to capture. But let's kind of walk through some of that. So I have some screenshots, what you'd expect. We saw that earlier. They can choose to take a screenshot kind of wherever they want. I can watch the video. I can watch portions of the video. I can see that they're clicking on Book a Flight. Now I can't lie to one another. Yeah, I did that. Well, why did you click that button four times? We only wrote it to click on it once. I could see they failed it here. I could scroll down a little bit more. I could see an action log where they're going, the things that they're trying to do, creating a booking page, NHC tags, LAX. I can look at the event log. Mind you, I'm not asking anybody for this. I didn't have to go trace down somebody and say, hey, could you just send me that event log? Could you give me security rights to open up the event viewer on that server so that I could go see that, right? How many times have we had to do that? No, we can't give you that. That's confidential information. You're like, I'm writing the app. How can it be confidential? I can look at the system information. What kind of proc, how much memory? Hey, we said you had to have a 2-gig machine. You've only got a 1-gig. So we're going to blame it all on a tester for now. This is all about developers. We'll give them love later in the year. We saw IntelliTrace. Let's find the IntelliTrace file. This was recorded as the tester was doing their test. It's that black box in the Visual Studio Cloud. I'm coining that term, Jay. I can see all the threads that were running, when they were running. I can see the entire stack, the exception stack. I can see the test data that was going back and forth on each one of the steps. I can see all the system information, the modules that got loaded. I have all this rich information about what that tester did. And of course, when I drive into it, I get pulled up and get pulled into a debugging environment that allows me to step through it. Ooh. Clearly, I just changed something. Yeah, look at that. So I can step back up through the stack. I can even step into things like, if I crawl way up here, I'm really going dangerous, and walk through the ASP page and see the different things that are happening. I get the full experience without being there. Seriously, that's cool, right? How often do you get a black box of the things that have happened so that you know exactly the stuff that's going on?
I have to assume the silence was just because they're stunned, because it's so awesome.
I think they were waiting for more awesomeness from me.
So kind of the third topic that we're covering is streamlining process, right? So there's kind of a whole big section that honestly we could do a full session on around process, right? So there's the idea that there are process templates built into Team Foundation Server that can be modeled to match your existing process, right? We certainly have templates on Agile, CMMI. There are ones that have been created for RUP and Scrum, and there's a lot of custom ones out there that you can download as well. The idea being that rather than try to make your team and your process conform to our tool, why not have our tool conform to your process, right? Tell us how you do your job. Tell us the type of data you want to collect, what type of reports you want to create, and who should have access to them. So those kinds of things can be baked into a process, a template, that is actually part of Visual Studio, part of all of the tools you're using, so that as you're pulling in data, as you're pulling back data, it can send you reminders. It can say, hey, did you remember to test that code before you checked it in? Because if you didn't, we're going to keep you from being able to check in. You know, make sure that you're entering the number of hours you spent working on that task as you do your check-in. So this kind of process workflow, the types of things that exist today in probably dusty old three-ring binders sitting on everyone's desk or maybe in a library somewhere, that can all be automated and just baked into your day-to-day work. So I actually kind of like this quote. At first I was, you know, kind of like, I don't know about that slide. I'm like, you know, this actually rings pretty true with software development, right? So risk comes from not knowing what you're doing. And we don't necessarily just mean, you know, you're going in there and you have no idea what you're doing, but not really being cognizant of what everybody is doing, right? Sometimes people get a little weird, like, oh, it's like Big Brother. Everybody knows who's working on what, when everyone's going to be done, but that's good, right? You want to know when the person down the aisle is going to be done, because maybe you're waiting on his stuff before you can move on. Maybe your PMs need that updated information so that they can tell somebody realistically when that product can actually launch. So there's a lot of value in everybody knowing where everybody else is, right? Where are the architects? How far along are the testers? How was that last build that made it out there? Was it good? Can I move on? Or do I need to start maintaining and going back and fixing some bugs on the stuff I was already working on? Nobody likes being in that state of just not really knowing where you are today. So there's a lot, and again, some more things that keep you up at night. So we talked a little bit early on about unhappiness from more of a developer's perspective, and now we're looking at it kind of more from the process and information gathering perspective. So what are the things that keep you up at night? So some of the things that we hear, whether it's from a manager or from the devs themselves, is, are we actually going to be able to deliver this project on time, right? I don't want to spend all weekend working on something. I don't want to put in 80 hours a week. It'd be nice if I had some heads up if that's coming, right? So being able to kind of see trending data. How fast are we getting things done? Are we trending towards being done on time? Or are we looking at having to push out a couple of weeks? You know, what do I need to do to course correct? If I'm making a change to some requirements early on, if I'm making some changes to my code, it'd be really great to have a tool to tell me what that impacts down the road. You know, what tests need to be rewritten, what things need to be rerun, what things might need to be re-architected a little bit. So having kind of that data where everything is related to everything else so that you can see the impact that every change is having can certainly help, again, not keep you up at night. Because now you know, oh, that little change I'm about to make, yeah, that's going to, you know, kind of take down all these other things here. So maybe we need to back off and not do that. You know, what fires will we have to put out that we don't even know about yet? So it can, again, help give you some nice kind of foresight into this change I'm going to make, this thing I'm about to do, this is all the impact that it's going to have. And kind of lastly, what can I do to reduce all the risks, right? Software development, full of risks. There are all kinds of things to take into consideration on a daily basis that can affect, you know, the quality, how quickly you can get things out the door. So there's a lot of new features in 2010 specifically for supporting agile teams. So, you know, some of the things that you used to have to develop extra parts for, you had to maybe download a third-party template to get backlog planning, iteration planning, these kinds of extra tools. Now, we've just baked those right into 2010. So if you're using the Agile 5.0 template that comes with Team Foundation Server 2010, you're going to notice a lot of new tooling and a lot of new features that really help to support teams that are doing agile work. There's some new workbooks, so some Excel workbooks that are accessible right through Team Foundation Server for things like product backlogs, iteration backlogs, and there's a lot of great data in there. So not only can you manage all of the work items, but you can do things like enter in when are people going on vacation, how many hours do people work a week, and then have it show you, okay, how is that work balanced across my team? Is someone overallocated? Is there someone who doesn't have enough work? So we can kind of, you know, mess around with who's doing what until we kind of balance that out across the board. So again, the great thing is now these tools are just baked right into 2010. So this is, we're actually going to show some of this stuff in the demo, but again, we've got some new charts, some new Excel reports, some new Excel spreadsheets that get baked right into 2010. Simplified reporting. So one thing we definitely heard the feedback on with 2005 and 2008 was that, you know, I'm not a SQL Server reporting services guru, so some of this reporting stuff is a little difficult for the team, right? You might have one guy on the team that knows how to do it, or maybe you became that person who got the book dropped in their lap and you're the ones customizing the report. But there wasn't a really easy way for say, business folks to get really good reporting around everything they needed, right? There wasn't really ad hoc reporting either. So here we've got some new simplified reporting. So not only do we have improved reports, so a lot of the reports that we already had have been streamlined. We've added some great new graphics and features where maybe we have multiple reports on one page so that you can really compare and contrast data. We've also got some new Excel reporting. So there are some folks out there that already do reporting with Excel, using Excel services to hit some back-end database, right? So we're leveraging that with TFS now. So now you can simply go in and say, hey, I've got a set of work items I'm looking at. Maybe it's all the bugs that were assigned to me today. Maybe it's all the tasks my team is working on today. But maybe I don't want to have to go into reporting services and pick from one of 40 or 50 canned reports because none of those are really going to give me what I need. What I'd really like to do is just take that data, pump it into a reporting mechanism, and be able to make some changes and update it on the fly. That's what this tooling is going to allow you to do. So I can take an existing set of data, open it up in Excel, have it generate a bunch of canned reports for me that I can then go in and tweak. I can change the pivots, I can change the fields I'm looking at, and then I can refresh that data. So it gives you a much more powerful way to do ad hoc reporting without having to be an expert on how to create these reports. So that's a cool new feature that we've added in 2010 as well. Now, on the SharePoint side, we're certainly taking advantage of a lot of the new SharePoint functionality that's come out. One of the things that we've definitely made much, much better is, you know, not only improved integration with SharePoint, but the very, very easy way to create powerful dashboards, right? So you're not going to spend weeks trying to create dashboards that have great reports and great trending data and all kinds of good interfaces. This is a much more out-of-the-box experience. So now you can create a dozen different dashboards, you know, in a matter of a day or two, so that different folks from the team can simply go to SharePoint. They can look at testing data. Maybe another person is more focused on build data. Somebody else might be looking at it from more of a developer focus. So you can easily create dashboards that are more customized towards your target audience. And the best thing about that, you know, we saw that slide early on with the people falling asleep in the status meeting, is you don't necessarily have to do that anymore, right? I mean, if you're pumping this data real time from TFS up into SharePoint, why have everybody sit around and read through, here's what I did today, here's all the things I got to do tomorrow? I mean, if you're doing that kind of from an agile perspective, 15 minutes in the morning, that's fine. But if you're spending 2, 3, 4 hours a week on it, that's a lot of time you could be doing cool stuff, right? You could be writing new code, fixing bugs, doing all the stuff that you enjoy doing. So this gives you a much easier way to give that transparency to people. If someone asks, where are you today? Well, hey, it's all up on the SharePoint site, right? They can open up, see how many work items got fixed, how many bugs got fixed, what's the status of the last build, and no one needs to sit in a 4-hour meeting to do this. So for the last time, I'm going to bring Clark up to show off some cool new features in 2010 around reporting in SharePoint.
Are you tired of me yet? Promise this is the last time. No, it's the last time. I'm tired. So, how many people do status reports? See, the problem is we're not all doing them. There's two facts about developers. Everything's done will be done in 2 days, and the weekend is infinitely long. We can't estimate. It's all right. Let's just admit it. We can't estimate it. Let's use tools to generate fact. Let's let people do some kind of analytics on what we do and make those decisions for us. So when we say that it's 2 days ago, more like 4, buddy. So let's walk through a few things. Reporting has been something that has changed quite a bit. In fact, some of the fundamentals of how work items work has changed dramatically. But I'm actually going to start with the build. Build reports, let's view the builds. Quite a lot of builds, right? It was pretty busy last night at 5:15 a.m. Those are the correct times. So here's a rich build report. Before we had some text, we couldn't really do anything with it. There was no decisions. I can see the change sets, who checked them in. I can actually expand this out and see everything that's happening. Properties that were passed in. I can guarantee at least a quarter of this audience has been bitten by the infamous blank property inside of MS Build or NANT or something, and the build just blew up. And you spent 2 hours trying to find that double whack because there was no property there. Here I can actually see it. I can see how long it takes. I can open the log file if I want, if I so choose to read that 1.5 million lines of goo. But this isn't a simple build. This is a big build. And we've changed how the build system works. It's now based on XAML. You can see it's just a bunch of triangles. That's the build. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to see how that build flows? Use the power of things like Windows Workflow. Jump out to MS Build when you need to. This is a big build. It's still expanding. It will be a while. I'm zooming out. I promise. A lot of stuff happens in the build. That's okay. That's time that we get to do other stuff. We get to write code. Let the build do the build stuff. Let's look at work items for a bit. Anybody kind of upset the last 5, 6 years, 2 months? We didn't have hierarchical work items? Come on, the guy, I mean, those, yes, one guy. Liar. Now I have proper linking. Let's create a new query across my work items. I have the ability to say, hey, I'd like a flat list. I'd like a tree. I could see it's a tree because that clearly looks like a tree. I can define how the tree looks, how it's queried. I can actually export that into Excel as a tree view. This might not actually work out because I'm not sure that I have anything linked. And I, of course, don't. So let's go link something. Let's link ID number 1 to ID number 2. Add some links here. Link 2. I'm going to link to a work item. At least I thought I was. More like a test case. I believe it was number 2. All right. And now, save that puppy. And now I'll actually see that relationship. At least I thought I would. Skipping right along. And I can define what my links are. Are they parents? Are they children? Were they created by? So I have some knowledge about what that structure is. So when I ask myself questions about what I'm doing, I can ask intelligent questions. How many bugs were created by this person? How many bugs were created for that one given product? I've been to Redmond a number of times and watched people like Jay and a number of friends inside Visual Studio stand up and give fact about their development lifecycle. We're closing 100 bugs a day. We've been on this trend for so long. By fact, we historically know we're going to close 100 a day. Unless we put more people at it or solve nuclear fission, we're going to solve 100 a day. So let's look at some of those baked-in reports. Every manager in the room wants to have a dashboard. They want to have stoplights, flashing bubbles and things going off. So here's some dashboards out of the box. Telling me fact about my system, so that we can make educated, real decisions about how my system is being built. It's the source of truth. The bugs, how they're getting created, what priorities are they, what state are we in? Which ones are active? Being able to look at your own tasks, your own bugs, so that you can manage your daily work. Unfortunately, the information is only as good as the stuff that you put in there. If you're not using the system, you can't make fact and decisions about that. But if you are, then you get all the richness, the awesomeness of Team Foundation Server. That's it for me. Thank you.
So we're going to wrap up with just a few things. So, you know, you got to have a wrap-up slide. I feel like this is always required. The idea being that, you know, all development teams can improve. I get a lot of people who, you know, come talk to me and they're like, well, we've only got 5 people on our team. Like, you're telling me you don't really have room to improve with stuff like this, with good source control, code visualization, work item tracking, testing tools. I've seen huge teams where thousands of developers, internally we have thousands of developers using these tools. So it doesn't matter how big or how small your team is. All development teams can improve if they adopt good practices and find really easy ways to enforce them, right? Visual Studio can help you get rid of wasteful activities. I'm not saying you should completely cut out status meetings, although I'm sure there's people who'd love that. There's still need to get together once in a while, right? We can't just literally sit in our cubes and never interact, although maybe that's ideal for some folks. Eventually, you're going to have to get together, but you can certainly reduce some of that wasted time where people drool in and fall asleep in meetings because there's information being shared that's not relevant, right? You can make the data more relevant to you. And again, lastly, kind of those things, we only focused on a small part of it today, right? We talked about creating bugs. We just kind of dipped our toe a little bit into the testing stuff. We talked about some of the architecture tools and some of the reporting and process management. There is a whole lot more in this tool set than what we've really had time to cover. I've already had a few people ask me today, so I think this slide is actually going to be really relevant. People get confused as, okay, well, what do I need to get this stuff, right? There's different versions of Visual Studio, certainly way less than there were a couple of years ago. We used to have like 12 different versions of Visual Studio. Now we're down to three. So we've got three versions of Visual Studio. So to clarify kind of what's in the different editions, right? We have Professional, so that's kind of the base IDE. Even that has gotten a lot of great, cool new stuff, right? We've added Silverlight development tools. We've added Azure development tools, things for doing multi-core development. Of course, there's always going to be IDE enhancements that come out with every new version. Of course, we still have multi-targeting. Now you can target the .NET 4.0 framework. But then you move up a little bit. So now you're going to start seeing some of the things that we were demoing today. So the next version up is the Premium Edition. So this is going to have a lot of those database tools that we've talked about in the past, so we didn't even talk about that today, but if you've ever heard any of us speak, you've probably heard us mention the database tools. The big change there is we now have a database provider model, so you're no longer tied to only being able to use those tools against SQL Server. So if you've got some questions about those tools, come see me afterwards. I'd be happy to talk about them, and like I said, downstairs, actually, if you go down the stairs and to the end of the hallway, there is actually a room full of people with computers ready to demo these things for you as well. So make sure you take advantage of that. But some of the things that you're going to see in Premium, the biggest ones, functional UI testing, right? Finally, we've added that. So the functional UI testing, WinForms, WebForms, that is now in the Premium Edition. There's, of course, the stuff we had before, profiling tools, code coverage tools. One of the new ones is test impact analysis. So we talked about the fact that, hey, when I start making changes to stuff, when I start making changes to my code, I want you to be able to tell me what the impact is. What are the test cases out there that need to be rerun to regression against these changes that I've made? That's a tool that we're adding with Premium. Static code analysis we had before, code metrics we had before. And again, the database tools, there's a few new things here and there, but for the most part, the big change there is support for other databases. So being able to do change management, testing, generating data, all of that kind of stuff now can be done right from within Visual Studio. And then, of course, last but not least is Ultimate. So we actually have 90-day trials available for the Ultimate Edition out on the table. So the Ultimate Edition is kind of the big kahuna edition, right? It has everything in it. So everything that we talked about today is going to be included. You're going to have all those architecture tools, the UML modeling, the validation tools. You're also going to have load and web testing tools, which we've had in the past. That tool that we kind of briefly jumped into where you saw Clark kind of go through and show off kind of that manual test tool where you can fast forward in the data collectors, that's actually part of the test manager tool. So that tool can actually be bought by itself, but it is included in Ultimate. So if someone buys Ultimate, they get all of those tools too. So you get a lot of stuff with the Ultimate Edition. Now, kind of the other tools that are available, because we did mention a few others. So, of course, Team Foundation Server. One of the biggest changes, one of the big hurrahs, right, is if you have MSDN, TFS is included now. So you actually get that for free with MSDN. So Team Foundation Server, again, some of the new stuff there. Gated check-in is a huge new feature that got added. The workflow-based build is also huge. And, of course, the test case management. Lab management, again, we didn't really talk about it too much today. That's that virtualization platform for your test lab environment. So that's another new tool that's a plug-in to Team Foundation Server. So you do have to have Team Foundation Server to leverage it. And just to pre-answer the question right now, it's Hyper-V technology only. And then at the very top, of course, Visual Studio Test Professional. So that, again, that's that tester tool that I showed you with the manual testing and the fast forward and the data collectors. That can actually be purchased as a separate tool because you may have people in your environment that are testers that have absolutely no need for Visual Studio. All they're ever going to do is run manual tests, create bugs, do things like that. They don't need to write code. So there is a tool for them as well. So calls to action. We always have calls to action. So download the virtual machine. A lot of times people don't just want to install the bits. They'd like to just pull down a virtual machine that's got everything already configured and running on it. So there's some great VMs down there that you can pull down, along with a lot of great training. There is so much free training out there that people aren't aware of. So if you don't know where it is, if you have trouble finding it, let me know. I'll help you find it. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's bit.ly/ccjsan. And we do have, I think we have some cards outside as well that have links on them as well. And then there's also the Visual Studio 2010 trial. But again, if you're here, grab the DVD. Don't bother downloading it. We'll save you the however many hours based on your bandwidth that you would spend downloading that. And there's also an eval guide out there. So I think that's it for our presentation.